God. Oh, I suppose you've heard the news of the handsome letter Mr. Frank Churchill has written to Mrs. Weston. I understand it was a very handsome letter indeed. Mr. Woodhouse saw the letter, and he says he never saw a handsomer letter in his life.
Oh, oh no, no, here, Mother, it can't.
Miss Bates, yeah.
Oh, Mrs. Weston.
I see you've heard my news already from Miss Bates.
It must be very pleasing to have Frank Churchill's congratulations at last. They're a little overdue.
I'll not hear a word against my son-in-law. He writes that he wishes to visit us very soon, but his aunt and benefactress, Mrs. Churchill, rules at Enscombe House and is a very odd-tempered woman. His coming depends on her being able to spare him, and she does not like him out of her sight.
Oh, so you do not consider his visitors by any means certain? Oh, I'm sorry for it.
Oh, Mrs. Goddard has arrived.
And she has Miss Smith with her.
Miss Smith?
Miss Harriet Smith.
She was placed at Mrs. Goddard's school some years back and has lately become a parlour boarder.
Oh.
Mrs. Goddard wrote to me to ask if she might bring her.
Who are her family?
Well, she's the natural daughter of somebody, but nobody knows who.
Ah, I see. Oh, but she is very pretty.
Mrs. Goddard, so pleased you could come.
Good evening, Miss Woodhouse.
And this must be Harriet.
Good evening, Miss Woodhouse.
Now you must come and sit by me and tell me all about yourself.
Thank you, Miss Woodhouse.
Mrs. Goddard, what do you say to a half a glass of wine? A small half glass, put in a tumbler of water.
So Mrs. Goddard tells me you've been staying with friends, Harriet.
I was 2 months with the Martins at Abbey Mill Farm.
The Martins?
Do you know them?
They rent a farm from Mr. Knightley.
Yes. Mrs. Martin has two parlours, two very good parlours indeed. One of them quite as large as Mrs. Goddard's drawing room. And they have 8 cows, 2 of them Alderneys and 1 a little Welsh cow, very pretty. And Mrs. Martin said, as I was so fond of it, that it should be called my cow. Oh, young Mr. Martin is so very good-humoured and obliging. He went 3 miles round one day in order to bring me some walnuts, because I had said how very fond of them I was.
Oh. Have young Mr. Martin and his wife any children?
Oh, but he is not married.
Indeed.
Are you to be married soon, Miss Woodhouse?
Oh, I have very little intention of ever marrying at all.
Dear me. It is odd to hear a woman talk so.
I have none of the usual inducements of women to marry. Were I to fall in love, it would be a different thing, but I've never been in love and I do not think I ever shall. And without love, I'm sure I'd be a fool to change such a situation as mine. I believe few married women are half such a mistress of their husband's house as I am of Hartfield.
But then, to be an old maid at last, like Miss Bates.
That's as formidable an image as you could present, Harriet. Oh. If I thought I could ever be like Miss Bates, I would marry tomorrow. But between ourselves, I'm convinced that there never can be a likeness except in being unmarried. And I shall not be a poor old maid. It is poverty only which makes celibacy contemptible.
Oh, I must introduce you to our new vicar, Mr. Elton. He's a very fine gentleman.
Don't you think so, Harriet?
Yes.
Mr. Elton! Oh, Mr. Elton, may I introduce you to Miss Harriet Smith?
A pleasure to meet any friend of Miss Woodhouse.
Oh, now look, supper's being served already. Mr. Elton, you will look after Miss Smith, won't you? Excuse me. Ah, Miss Bates. Oh, can I help you to a little tart?
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Martin, I suppose, is not a man of information, beyond the line of his own business. I mean, he does not read.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
That is, No, I don't know. But I believe he has read a good deal. He reads the agricultural reports. He never read The Romance of the Forest, nor The Children of the Abbey. He never heard of such books before I mentioned them, but he is determined to get them now as soon as ever he can.
What sort of looking man is Mr. Martin?
Oh, I thought him very plain at first, but I do not think him so plain now. But did you never see him? He has passed you very often.
Oh, that may be, but a young farmer
whether on horseback or on foot, is the very last sort of person to raise my curiosity. What do you imagine his age to be?
He was 24 the 8th of last June, and my birthday is the 23rd. Just a fortnight and a day's difference, which is very odd.
Oh, only 24. Oh, well, that is too young to settle. 6 years hence, if he could meet with a good sort of young woman in the same rank as his own, with a little money, might be very desirable.
Well, 6 years? But Miss Woodhouse, he would be 30 years old.
Oh, that is as early as most men can afford who are not born to an independence. Mr. Martin, I imagine, has his fortune entirely to make.
Oh, but they live very comfortably.
I wish you may not get into a scrape, Harriet. The misfortune of your birth ought to make you particularly careful as to your associates. And there can be no doubt of your being a gentleman's daughter. And you must support your claim to that station by everything within your power.
To be sure, yes. I suppose I must. Oh, Miss Woodhouse! Oh, there he is!
I do not know what your opinion may be, Mrs. Weston, of this great intimacy between Emma and Harriet Smith, but I think it is a bad thing.
A bad thing? Why so?
I think they will neither of them do the other any good.
Oh, you surprise me. I have been seeing their intimacy with the greatest pleasure.
Harriet Smith is the very worst sort of companion that Emma could possibly have. She knows nothing herself and looks upon Emma as knowing everything. How can Emma imagine she has anything to learn herself while Harriet is presenting such delightful inferiority?
She is not the superior young woman which Emma's friend ought to be, but as Emma wants to see her better informed, it will be an inducement to her to read more herself. They will read together. Oh, she means it, I know.
Now, Emma has been meaning to read more ever since she was 12 years old. She will never submit to anything requiring industry and patience and a subjection of the fancy to the understanding.
Only think of our having to meet him. How very odd. Well, Miss Woodhouse, is he like what you expected? What do you think of him? Do you think him so very plain?
He is very plain, undoubtedly. Remarkably plain. That is nothing compared with his entire want of gentility.
To be sure, he is not so genteel as a real gentleman. He has not such a fine air and way of walking as Mr. Knightley.
Well, Mr. Knightley's air is so remarkably good that it is not fair to compare Mr. Martin with him. But well, he's not the only gentleman you've been lately used to at Hartfield. What say you to, Mr. Elton? But in one respect, perhaps, Mr. Elton's manners are superior to Mr. Knightley's. They have more gentleness.
I have always thought Mr. Elton very agreeable.
Oh, he seems to me to be grown particularly gentle of late. I do not know whether he has any design of ingratiating himself with either of us, Harriet, but it strikes me that his manners are softer than they used to be. If he means anything by it, it must be to please you.
Do you really think so, Miss Woodhouse?
Mr. Martin, on the other hand, is a vulgar farmer. Totally inattentive to appearances and thinking of nothing but profit and loss. I have no doubt that he will thrive and be a very rich man in his time. And his being illiterate and coarse need not disturb us.
I must compliment you, Miss Woodhouse, on these striking improvements in Miss Smith's manner since her introduction at Hartfield. You have given her all she required. She was a beautiful creature when she came to you, but in my opinion, the attractions you have added are infinitely superior to what she received from nature.
I'm glad you think I've been useful to her. But Harriet wanted only drawing out and receiving a very few hints. She had all the natural grace of sweetness of temper and artlessness in herself. I have done very little.
If it were admissible to contradict a lady...
I have perhaps given her more decision of character.
Exactly so. So much super-added decision of character. Skillful has been the hand.
Harriet?
Yes?
Did you ever sit for your picture?
Dear, no, never.
Oh, what an exquisite possession a good picture of you would be.
I almost long to attempt her likeness myself, Mr. Elton.
Let me entreat you, Miss Woodhouse, to exercise so charming a talent in favour of your friend.
Well, if you give me such kind encouragement, Mr. Elton, I believe I shall try what I can do.
Am I allowed to move yet, Miss Woodhouse?
No, Harriet. Not an inch. I'd forsworn ever drawing anybody again since my sister Isabella said I did not do her husband, Mr. John Knightley, justice. But as there are no husbands and wives in the case at present, I broke my resolution.
No husbands and wives in the case at present, indeed, as you observe. Exactly so. None at present.
You've made her too tall, Emma.
Oh, no. But certainly not too tall. Consider, she is sitting down. Proportions. Foreshortening. Oh, no. It gives one exactly the idea of a height such as Miss Smith.
Mm. It is very pretty. Just as your drawings always are, my dear. The only thing I do not thoroughly like is that she seems to be sitting out of doors, with only a little shawl over her shoulders, and it makes one think that she must catch cold.
My dear Papa, it's supposed to be summer, a warm day in summer. Look at the tree.
But it is never safe to sit outdoors, my dear.
I must confess, I regard it as a most happy thought, the placing of Miss Smith outdoors. It so suits the naivety of her manners, and the tree is touched with such inimitable spirit. Oh, it is most admirable. Indeed, it must be framed. Might I be trusted with the commission?
Oh, well, I could not give you such a troublesome office for the world.
Do not deny me the infinite pleasure I should have in executing it. I shall ride to London immediately. Oh. Give me the precious deposit.
Something extraordinary has happened.
Tell me, Harriet.
When I got back to Mrs. Goddard's for dinner, she told me that Mr. Martin had been there an hour before, and finding me not at home and not particularly expected, left a letter, and it contained a proposal of marriage. Yeah. Will you read the letter? Pray do. Well, is it a good letter, or is it too short?
Yes. Indeed. A very good letter. So good a letter, Harriet, that everything considered, I think one of his sisters must have helped him.
Well, and what shall I do?
What shall he do? In what respect? Do you mean with regard to the letter?
Yes.
Well, you must answer it, of course. And speedily.
Yes. But what shall I say?
Oh, the letter had much better be all your own. You will express yourself very properly, I'm sure. Your meaning must be unequivocal, with such expressions of gratitude and concern for the pain you're inflicting as propriety requires.
You think I ought to refuse him, then?
Ought to refuse him? My dear Harriet, what do you mean? Are you in any doubt?
No, I do not. That is, I do not mean to... Oh, what shall I do? Pray, Miss Woodhouse, tell me what I ought to do.
Oh, I shall not give you any advice, Harriet. I will have nothing to do with it. This is a point which you must settle with your own feelings.
Oh, I had no notion that he liked me so very much.
I lay it down as a general rule, Harriet, that if a woman doubts as to whether she would accept a man or not, she certainly ought to refuse him. But don't imagine I want to influence you.
Oh, no. I am sure you are a great deal too kind to... But if you would just advise me what I had best do... No. No, I do not mean that. As you say, one's mind ought to be quite made up. It'll be safer to say no, perhaps? Do you think I'd better say no? Miss Woodhouse, as you will not give me your opinion, I must do as well as I can by myself. And I have now quite determined to refuse, Mr. Martin. Do you think I'm right?
Perfectly right. You're doing just as you ought, dear Harriet. It would have grieved me to lose your acquaintance. I could not have visited Mrs. Robert Martin of Abbey Mill Farm.
You could not have visited me?
No.
To be sure you could not. But I never thought of that before. Oh, that would have been too dreadful.
Oh, dear affectionate creature. We will not be parted. A woman is not to marry a man merely because she is asked, or because he can write a tolerable letter.
And it is but a short letter, too.
Oh, come, my own sweet little friend. You shall come visiting with me. We should be quite safe from any tedious news of their beloved Jane Fairfax. Because as well as I can calculate, a letter from her is not due.
Oh, privileged we are, Miss Woodhouse, Miss Smith, aren't we, Mother? We're privileged. Mm. Yeah. We have just had Mrs. Cole with us. Oh, do take a seat. She called in for 10 minutes and was good enough to sit an hour with us. And she had a piece of cake and was so kind as to say she liked it very much. I hope you will do us the favour and eat a piece too.
Oh, thank you, Miss Smith.
Mrs. Cole began by saying, I know you cannot have heard from your niece Jane lately because it is not her time for writing. Then I immediately said, but indeed we have. We had a letter this very morning. I do not know that I ever saw anybody more surprised.
Oh, I've heard from Miss Fairfax so lately. Oh, I'm extremely happy. I hope she's well.
Oh, thank you. Oh, you're so kind. Oh, now, where can it be? Oh, I was reading it to Mrs. Cole, and since she went away, I was reading it again to my mother.
Are you expecting Miss Fairfax here soon?
Oh, yes, next week. Oh. That is the reason for her writing out of the rule. Oh, dear, I had it in my hand so very lately. Oh, Miss Shipe, must be on the table. Oh, my mother is so delighted, for Jane is to be 3 months with us, at least. Oh. The case, you see, is that the Campbells, who have charge of her education since her dear parents died, you know, Miss Smith, they are going to Ireland. And their daughter, Mrs. Dixon, has persuaded her mother and father to come over and see her directly. For till she married last October, she was never away from them.
Well, you must feel very fortunate that Miss Fairfax should be allowed to come to you at such a time.
Oh.
Well, considering the very particular friendship between her and Mrs. Dixon, you could hardly have expected her to be excused from accompanying Colonel and Mrs. Campbell.
Well, very true indeed. They want her excessively to come over. Mr. Dixon does not seem in the least backward in desiring it. Oh, he's a most charming young man. Oh, here it is.
Oh.
I was sure it could not be far off. I put my hassif on it, you see, without being aware. And so it was quite him. Well, I have given you just a hint of what Jane writes about. We will turn to her letter. I'm sure she tells her own story a great deal better than I can tell it for her.
I'm afraid we must be running away. My father will be expecting us. I had no intention. I thought I had no power of staying more than 5 minutes when I first entered the house. I called merely because I could not pass your door without inquiring after Mrs. Bates. But I've been so pleasantly detained. But now, however, we must wish you and Mrs. Bates good morning.
Oh, good morning, good morning. Miss Woodhouse, Mrs. Smith. Oh.
Well, you have improved Harriet Smith. You've cured her of her schoolgirl's giggle. She really does you credit.
Thank you, Mr. Knightley. I should be mortified indeed if I did not believe I'd been of some use. Hmm.
I do not pretend to fix on times or places, but I must tell you, I believe your little friend will soon hear something to her advantage.
Indeed. Of what sort?
I have reason to think that Harriet Smith will soon have an offer of marriage. Robert Martin is the man. Her visit to Abbey Mill this summer seems to have done the business. He is desperately in love and means to marry her. He came to me 2 evenings ago on purpose to consult me about it.
Pray, Mr. Knightley, how do you know that Mr. Martin did not speak yesterday?
Certainly I do not absolutely know it, but it may be inferred. Was she not the whole day with you?
Come. I will tell you something in return for what you have told me. He did speak yesterday. That is, he wrote and was refused.
Refused?
Yes.
Then she is a greater simpleton than I ever believed her. What is the foolish girl about?
Oh, to be sure, it is always incomprehensible to a man that a woman should ever refuse an offer of marriage.
But what is the meaning of this? Harriet Smith refuse Robert Martin? Madness, if it is so. But I hope you are mistaken.
No, I saw her answer. Nothing could be clearer.
You saw her answer? You wrote her answer too, huh? Emma, this is your doing. You persuaded her to refuse him.
Well, if I did, which I'm far from allowing, I should not feel that I had done anything wrong. Mr. Martin is a very respectable young man, but I cannot admit him to be Harriet's equal.
Not Harriet's equal? No, he is not, for he is as much her superior in sense as in situation. She is the natural daughter of nobody knows whom, with probably no settled provision at all, and certainly no respectable relations. She is pretty, and she is good-tempered, and that is all.
Oh, you are not just to Harriet's claims. The sphere in which she moves is much above his. It would be a degradation.
A degradation to illegitimacy and ignorance to be married to a respectable, intelligent gentleman farmer? She was as happy as possible with the Martins in the summer. She had no sense of superiority then. If she has it now, you have given it. You have been no friend to Harriet Smith.
Oh, Harriet's claims to marry well are not so contemptible as you represent them. Look, she is not a clever girl, but she has better sense than you are aware of, and does not deserve to have her understanding spoken of so slightingly. But supposing her to be as you describe her, only pretty and good-natured, let me tell you that in the degree she possesses them, they are not trivial recommendations to the world in general. She is, in fact, a beautiful girl, until it appears that men are much more philosophic on the subject of beauty than they are generally supposed, and fall in love with well-informed minds instead of handsome faces, then I am very much mistaken if your sex in general would not think such beauty and sweetness of temper as Harriet's the highest claim a woman could possess.
Upon my word, Emma, to hear you abusing the reason you have is almost enough to make me think so too. You will puff Harriet up with such ideas of her own beauty and what she has claimed to that in a little while nobody within her reach will be good enough for her.
Oh, we think so very differently upon this point, Mr. Knightley. There can be no use in canvassing it. We shall only be making each other more angry.
Robert Martin has no great loss, if he can but think so. Your plans for Harriet are best known to yourself, but as you make no secret of your love of matchmaking, as a friend, I shall just hint to you that if Elton is the man, I think you will labour in vain. Elton is a very good sort of man, and a respectable vicar of Highbury, but he knows the value of a good income as well as anybody, and I am convinced that he does not mean to throw himself away.
Well, I am very much obliged to you, but at present, I only want to keep Harriet to myself.
Good morning to you.
Why, Mr. Elton?
I have just called for a few moments, Miss Woodhouse, to deliver this piece of paper. It is a copy of a charade which a friend of mine had addressed to a young lady, the object of his admiration. I do not offer it for Miss Smith's collection of riddles. Being my friends, I have no right to expose it in any degree to the public eye. But perhaps you might not dislike looking at it. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Farewell.
But what can it be, Miss Woodhouse? I have not an idea. I cannot guess in the least. Oh, do try to find it out, Miss Woodhouse. Do help me. I never saw anything so hard. Behold him there, the monarch of the seas. Can it be Neptune? Or a mermaid? Or a shark? Oh, no. Shark is only one syllable.
Shark, my dear Harriet, what are you thinking of? Where would be the use in bringing such a rod upon a mermaid or a shark? Give me the paper and listen. For Miss Blank. Well, read Miss Smith. My first displays the wealth and pomp of kings, lords of the earth, their luxury and ease. Well, that is court. Another view of man my second brings. Behold him there, the monarch of the seas. Well, that is ship, plain as can be. Oh. Now for the cream. But our united courtship, you know. What reverse we have. Man's boasted power and freedom all are flown. Lord of the earth and sea, he bends a slave, and woman, lovely woman, reigns alone. A very proper compliment. Oh. And there can be no doubt of its being written for you and to you. Listen to the end. Thy ready wit, the word will soon supply. May its approval beam in that soft eye. Oh. I congratulate you, Harriet, with all my heart. This is a connection which offers nothing but good. It will fix you in the centre of your real friends, close to Hartfield and to me, and will confirm our intimacy forever.
Oh, dear Miss Woodhouse, whatever you say is always right, and therefore I suppose and believe and hope it must be so.
Ah, Mr. Knightley.
Good morning.
Mr. John Knightley and our dear Isabella have gone into Highbury to do some Christmas shopping. Emma is up in the nursery with the children. She has given me instructions to direct you there upon your arrival.
She is a beautiful baby.
What a comfort it is that we think alike about our nephews and nieces. As to men and women, our opinions are sometimes very different. But with regard to these children, I observe, we never disagree.
If you were as much guided by nature in your estimation of men and women as you are where these children are concerned, we might always think alike.
Oh, to be sure, our discordances must always arise from my being in the wrong.
I have the advantage of you by 16 years' experience, and by not being a pretty young woman and a spoilt child. Come, my dear Emma, let us be friends, and say no more about it. Tell your aunt, little Emma, that she ought to set you a better example than to be renewing old grievances, and that if she were not wrong before, she is now.
That's very true. Little Emma, grow up a better woman than your aunt. Be infinitely cleverer and not half so conceited. Mr. Knightley, a word or two more and I have done. I only want to know that Mr. Martin is not very... very bitterly disappointed.
A man cannot be more so.
Oh, indeed, I'm sorry. Come, shake hands with me. Dear Harriet,
I've got a cold.
Mrs. Goddard says you have a fever too, and a bad sore throat.
Berry bath.
On Christmas Eve. You're miss dining at Randall's.
Yep. I am very unhappy.
Oh, poor Harriet. Mr. Elton will be very depressed when he hears of your state.
Goop.
Her throat is very much inflamed. And she has a good deal of heat about her.
A sore throat? I hope not of the infectious putrid sort. Indeed, you should take care of yourself. Let me entreat you to run no risks.
Poor Harriet. She will be missed at every moment.
Exactly so. Indeed. Dreadful. What an excellent device, the use of sheepskin for carriages. How very comfortable they make it. Ah, I see it snows a little night here.
Yes. Yes, I think we shall have a good deal of it.
Christmas weather.
Oh, and Mr. Elton, here's the charade. You were so obliging as to leave with us.
Oh.
Thank you for the sight of it. We admire it so much that I ventured to put it in Miss Smith's collection.
I have no hesitation in saying that if my friend could see his little effusion honoured in the manner you speak of, he would consider it the proudest moment of his life.
Good evening, oh, Mr. Weston. Mr. Weston, I am delighted
come along,
to
come. I do not catch cold. Oh, there is a fine fire in the drawing.
May I take your side for a moment?
Yes.
In the carriage with Mr. Elton and yourself, I was struck by the great deal of goodwill he shows you.
Me?
I never saw a man more intent on being agreeable in my life. Where he has a lady to please, every feature works. Has it never occurred to you, Emma, that he may be in love with you?
Mr. Elton, in love with me? What an idea.
I do not say it is so, but you will do well to consider whether it is so or not, and to regulate your behaviour accordingly. I think your manners towards him encouraging.
Oh.
I speak as a friend, Emma. You had better look about you and ascertain what you do.
I thank you, but assure you, you're quite mistaken. Mr. Elton and I are very good friends, and nothing more.
I believe you did not hear me telling the others in the drawing room, Emma, that Frank cannot be with us this Christmas.
Oh.
We had a letter from him this morning. But I have no doubt of seeing him here about the second week in January.
Mm. What a very great pleasure it'll be to you. Mm. And Mrs. Weston is so anxious to be acquainted with him.
Mrs. Churchill is very unreasonable.
I think it's very bad conduct of the Churchills to keep Frank Churchill from visiting his father. Do not, Mr. Knightley.
The Churchills are very likely at fault, but I dare say he might come if he would.
I do not know why you should say so. He wishes exceedingly to come, but his uncle and aunt will not spare him.
I have news of a favourite of yours, Mr. Knightley.
Ah.
Jane Fairfax has returned to live with her grandmother and aunt.
Hmm.
Miss Fairfax is a sort of elegant creature one cannot keep one's eyes from. I'm always watching her to admire, and I do pity her from my heart.
It is sad indeed that a young woman so refined and gifted should be consigned to the governess trade.
Mm.
The misery of its victims can only be pitied.
It is a great pity that the Bates circumstances should be so confined.
Miss Woodhouse, please forgive my interruptions, but is there any more news of your fair friend? Have you heard anything about her since our being at Randall's? The nature of the complaint seems quite alarming.
Yes,
I must entreat you not to hazard visiting her sick chamber again.
It is a simple cold, Mr. Elton.
I implore you, Mrs. Weston, to add your persuasions to mine.
No, but I...
Please induce Miss Woodhouse not to go to Mrs. Goddard's until we can be certain that Miss Smith's disorder has no infection. You must give me your promise, Miss Woodhouse.
I am to be allowed to visit my friend, I think.
So scrupulous for others, and yet so careless for herself.
What has Mr. Frank Churchill done to make you suppose him such an unnatural creature, Mr. Knightley?
There is one thing, Emma, which a man can always do, if he chooses, and that is his duty.
Hmm.
If you would say at once to Mrs. Churchill, "I must go and see my father immediately," in the tone of decision becoming a man, there would be no opposition made to his going.
No, but perhaps there might be to his coming back. Mr. Frank Churchill to be making such a speech as that to the uncle and aunt who have brought him up and who are to provide for him. I wish you'd try to understand what an amiable young man may be likely to feel in directly opposing those whom, as child and boy, he's been looking up to all his life.
Your amiable young man is a very weak young man if this is the first occasion of his carrying through a resolution to do right against the will of others.
Oh, you seem determined to think ill of him.
Me? Not at all. I should be as ready to acknowledge his merits as any other man, but I hear of none. except on a merely personal, that he is well-grown and good-looking, with smooth, plausible manners.
Well, if you have nothing else to recommend him, he will be a treasure at Highbury.
The weather, it seems, is worsening.
I admired your resolution in venturing out in such weather. But I dare say you shall get home very well. You are in two carriages. If one is blown over, the other will be at hand.
Emma, do you hear? A calamity! We are to be blown from our carriages.
With such a snowstorm, another hour or two may make the road impassable.
I wish the road might be impassable, so we might keep you all at Randalls. Accommodation can be found for all.
But the children are at Hartfield. What is to be done, dear Emma? What is to be done?
We must order the carriages directly. Yes.
Harry! Harry! Isabella and John must climb in with me. And Mr. Knightley.
Yes.
That's right. Emma, you must travel with Mr. Elton.
Miss Woodhouse, allow me to avail myself of this precious opportunity to declare my sentiments, which must already be well known.
Please, let go of my hand, Mr. Elton.
I flatter myself that my ardent attachment, unequalled love and unexampled passion could not fail of having some effect. And in short, I am very much resolved on being accepted as soon as possible.
Mr. Elton, you forget yourself. You take me for my friend.
I have hoped, feared, adored. I am ready to die if you refuse me.
Mr. Elton! My astonishment is much beyond anything I can express. After such behaviour as I have witnessed during the last month to Miss Smith...
Good heaven.
To be addressing me in this manner shows a great unsteadiness of character which I had not supposed possible.
I never thought of Miss Smith in the whole course of my existence. Never paid her any attentions but as your friend.
How eager you were for her picture.
Was she that drew it?
But to be sure, the charade.
Which I put into your hand. Oh, charming, Miss Woodhouse. Allow me to interpret this interesting silence. It confesses that you have long understood me.
No, sir, it confesses no such thing. So far from having long understood you, I have been in a most complete error with respect to your views until this moment. Your appearance of attachment to my friend Harriet gave me great pleasure. But had I supposed that she were not your attraction to Hartfield, I should certainly have thought you ill-judged in making your visit so frequent.
Madam, everyone has their level. But as for myself, I am not so totally in despair of an equal alliance as to be addressing myself to Miss Smith.
I'm exceedingly sorry, but it is as well the mistake ends where it does. Your disappointment, I trust, will not be lasting. I have no thoughts of matrimony at present. Oh, the wretched business. Oh, such a blow for Harriet. Well, I must make my explanation.
You, Miss Woodhouse.
I acknowledge myself grossly mistaken, and misjudging in all my observations, convictions, and prophecies of the last 6 weeks as regards Mr. Elton's intentions towards you.
It's nobody's fault. Well, I have nothing to complain of. Indeed, the affection of such a man as Mr. Elton would have been too great a distinction. Only somebody so kind and impartial as you, Miss Woodhouse, would have thought it possible.
You, Harriet, are the superior creature of the two. I have been but half a friend to her. The worst error lies at my door, to take so active a part in bringing any two people together. It is making light of what ought to be serious.
It is so kind of Miss Woodhouse to come and pay her respects to you, Jane. Indeed, she is very grateful, Miss Woodhouse. Oh, we're so happy to have her at home with us.
Mrs. Weston tells me that you and Mr. Frank Churchill were at Weymouth at the same time, Miss Fairfax.
and are a little acquainted.
Is he handsome?
I believe he is reckoned a very fine young man.
But is he agreeable?
He is generally thought so.
Does he appear a sensible young man, a young man of information?
It is difficult to decide on such points. I believe everyone finds his manner pleasing.
She's very reserved, to be sure. Oh, that I had been satisfied with persuading Harriet not to accept a young Mr. Martin. I'm sure I've not an idea of anybody else who'd be desirable for her.
Emma, I have a piece of news for you.
Hmm? News? Oh, yes, I always like news. What is it? Why do you smile so?
Mr. Elton is going to be married.
Oh.
To a Miss Hawkins. I thought it would interest you.
Well, he will have everybody's wishes for his happiness. As to who or what Miss Hawkins is, nothing, I suppose, can be known. One feels it cannot be a very long acquaintance. He's been in Bath only 4 weeks.
There will be a new neighbour for us all.
Hmm. Oh, I've blundered most dreadfully.
Ah, we have visitors, Emma.
Miss Woodhouse, may I introduce you to my son, Mr. Frank Churchill?
I'm very pleased to make your acquaintance.
And are yours?
He is to stay a fortnight. If he had come at Christmas, he could not have stayed for 3 days.
I conceive my father's marriage to be the wisest measure, Miss Woodhouse. Miss Taylor, as was a particular friend of yours, I believe.
Mm.
Elegant, agreeable manners I was prepared for, but I confess I did not know that I was to find a pretty young woman in Mrs. Weston.
You can't see too much perfection in Mrs. Weston for my feelings.
Introduction's over. I must be going. I have business at the Crown about my hay. I shall have the pleasure of seeing you both at the Coles party, I hope. I hear the evening may end in dancing.
But I am not fond of dinner visiting. No more is Emma. Late hours do not agree with us. However, since they are desirous to have dear Emma dine with them, I cannot wish to prevent it.
Yes, Papa.
And as I recall, I have a great many errands for Mrs. Weston at Ford's for that very party. I need not hurry you, though, Frank.
Very well, Father.
Let me walk a little way with you.
My dear sir, upon no account of the world.
I insist upon Knox.
I have the honour of being already acquainted with a neighbour of yours, Miss Woodhouse, a family by the name of Bates.
Oh, you're acquainted with Miss Fairfax, are you not? From Weymouth?
I saw them yesterday.
And, how did you think Miss Fairfax looking?
Ill.
Oh.
Very ill. That is, if a young lady can ever be allowed to look ill. Miss Fairfax is naturally so pale as almost always to give the appearance of ill health. A most deplorable want of complexion.
It was certainly never brilliant. But there is a delicacy in her skin which gives particular elegance to the character of her face.
I've heard many people say the same.
You know Miss Fairfax's situation in life. Well, that she is destined to live a good deal more modestly than she did while living with the Campbells as their daughter's companion.
Yes, I know that. Did you ever hear her play?
Hmm. You forget how much she belongs to Highbury. I have heard her every year of our lives since we both began. She plays charmingly.
Oh, you think so, do you?
Hmm.
I remember one proof of her being thought to play well. A man, a very musical man, and in love with another woman, engaged to her to the point of marriage, would never yet ask that other woman to sit down to the instrument if the lady in question could sit down instead. And that, I thought, was some proof.
Proof indeed. Mr. Dixon is very musical, is he?
Yes. Mr. Dixon and Miss Campbell were the persons, and I thought it very strong proof.
Well, how did Miss Campbell appear to like it?
Well, it was her very particular friend, you know.
Oh, poor comfort. One would rather have a stranger preferred than one's very particular friend. Miss Fairfax must have felt the improper and dangerous distinction.
There appeared a perfectly good understanding among them all. However, it's impossible for me to say how it might all be behind the scenes. But you, who've known Miss Fairfax from a child, must be a better judge of her character.
Yeah, it's natural to suppose we should be intimate, but we never were. I could never attach myself to anyone so completely reserved.
Ah, there is safety in reserve, but no attraction. One cannot love
a reserved person.
Not till the reserve ceases towards oneself, and then the attraction may be the greater.
Ah, I agree with you perfectly.
Help! Help!
Mr. Knightley! Came in your carriage for once. You're too fond of leaving it at home and getting about as you can. Tonight, come like a gentleman. I'm quite glad to see you.
How lucky that we should arrive at the same moment. For if we had met in the drawing room, I doubt whether you would have discerned me to be more of a gentleman than usual.
I was visiting Miss Bates, and as soon as I entered the room, I was struck by the sight of the pianoforte, a very elegant-looking instrument. It had arrived the day before, to the great astonishment of the aunt and niece, and entirely unexpected. Jane herself quite at a loss to think who could have ordered it. But now they're perfectly satisfied that it could only have come from one quarter, Colonel Campbell.
Of course. Why do you smile, Mr. Churchill?
Nay, why do you?
I suppose I smile for pleasure at Colonel Campbell's being so rich and liberal. It is a handsome present.
Very.
I wonder that it was never made before.
Perhaps Miss Fairfax has never been staying here so long before.
Oh, you may say what you choose, but your countenance testifies that your thoughts on the subject are very much like mine.
I'd rather believe you're giving me credit for more astuteness than I deserve. If Colonel Campbell is not the person, who can it be?
Mrs. Dixon.
Oh, very true indeed. I had not thought of her. Your suspicions have guided me.
Well, if so, you must extend your suspicions to Mr. Dixon.
Mr. Dixon, very well, yes. Yes, I immediately perceive that it must be the joint present of Mr. and Mrs. Dixon.
I do not pretend to reflect upon the good intentions of either Mr. Dixon or Miss Fairfax, but I cannot help suspecting either that after making his proposal to her friend, he had the misfortune to fall in love with her.
Huh?
I'm sure there must be a particular case for her choosing to come to Highbury instead of going to the Campbells, to Ireland. We hear she must be leading a life of privation. There it would have been all enjoyment. I do not require you to adopt all my suspicions. I honestly tell you what they are.
Indeed, you injure me if you suppose me unconvinced. I can now see it in no other light than an offering of love.
Ah.
Really? Miss Fairfax has done her hair in so odd a way, so very odd a way, that I cannot keep my eyes from her. I never saw anything so outrageous. Look at his curls. This must be a fancy of her own. I must go and ask her if it's the Irish fashion. Shall I? Yes, yes, I will. And you shall see how she takes it.
Oh, this is the luxury of a large party. One can get near everybody and say everything. My dear Emma, I am longing to talk to you. Do you know how Miss Bates and her niece came here?
Well, they walked, I conclude. How else could they come?
Very true. Well, a little while ago, it occurred to me how very sad it would be to have Jane Fairfax walking home late at night, cold as the nights are now. Mr. Weston agreed with me. I made my way directly to Miss Bates to assure her that our carriage would be at her service. But she said there was no occasion to trouble us, for Mr. Knightley's carriage had brought them and was to take them home again.
Well, I know no man more good-natured and considerate than Mr. Knightley.
Well, you give him credit for more disinterested benevolence in this instance than I do. In short, I have made a match between Mr. Knightley and Jane Fairfax. See the consequence of keeping you company? What do you say to it?
Mr. Knightley and Jane Fairfax?
Yes.
Oh, Weston, how could you think of such a thing? Mr. Knightley must not marry. And with Jane Fairfax, of all women.
She's always been a favourite with him. She's to play now.
Mr. Knightley does not want to marry. I'm sure he's not the least idea of it. Do not put it into his head. He's as happy as possible by himself, his farm and his sheep.
I have heard him speak so very highly of Jane Fairfax. The interest he takes in her. Such an admirer of her performance on the pianoforte. Oh, and I had forgotten. The pianoforte. May it not be from Mr. Knightley?
I've heard him lamenting her having no instrument repeatedly.
An excellent performance, is it not?
This present from the Campbells, this pianoforte, was very kindly given.
Yes, but they would have done better had they given her notice of it. Surprises are foolish things. Mrs. Weston, you'll be so kind as to take Miss Fairfax's place at the piano?
Of course.
Miss Bates, are you mad to let your niece sing herself hoarse in this manner? Go and interfere. They have no mercy on her.
She's time for dancing, in any case. Miss Fairfax may be in need of a partner.
I am no dancer.
Miss Woodhouse, may I have the pleasure?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Churchill.
In episode 1 of Emma by Jane Austen, dramatised by April De Angelis, Emma Woodhouse was Eve Best, Mr. Woodhouse, Norman Rodway, Mr. Knightley, Robert Bathurst, Miss Bates, Marcia Warren, Mrs. Weston, Patience Tomlinson, Harriet Smith, Ellie Bevan, Mr. Elton, David Bamber, Mr. Weston, Andrew Wincott, Jane Fairfax, Beth Chalmers, and Frank Churchill, Tom Hollander. The music was by Martin Suter and Sarah Stowe, and the director was Jonkel Panty. Emma by Jane Austen. Dramatised in 2 episodes by April De Angelis. Episode 2.
I had a wonderful evening last night. I was given the world's, all the world one ever has to give for another half hour of dancing. Well, what do you think? It's a sizeable room. 10 couple may stand here very well.
The paper is worse than I expected. Oh, look, in places you see it is dreadfully dirty. The wainscot is more yellow and forlorn than anything I could have imagined.
Oh, my dear, you are too particular. What does all that signify? You'll see nothing of it by candlelight.
Men never know when things are dirty or not.
Women will have all their needless cares.
What do we say, then, to having a ball here at the Crown?
Oh. Well, a smaller room and it would be a crowd. Nothing could be further from pleasure than dancing in a crowd.
I wish one could know which arrangement our guests in general would like best.
Very true. You want your neighbour's opinions.
Yes.
Miss Bates is near. Suppose I go ask her to join us.
You'll get nothing of purpose from Miss Bates. She will be all delight and gratitude, but she will tell you nothing. She'll not even answer your question.
But she's so amusing.
Aye, Frank, go and fetch Miss Bates and let us end the matter at once. She will enjoy the scheme, I am sure. And I shall think you a great blockhead if you return without the niece.
What of supper? What shall be the supper room?
There is the card room.
Oh, that is too small for comfort.
There is the other larger room along the passage.
But the passage is so long and awkward. I'm afraid of draughts for the young people.
Oh, it is a mere nothing. And not the least draught from the stairs.
I shall see the passage again.
Mr. Churchill is due to return to his benefactress before the date of our ball, is he not?
He shall write to Enscombe to propose staying a few days beyond his fortnight, which cannot possibly be refused.
Indeed, the evils of the passageway are much less than I had supposed before.
Very trifling.
So then we have our decision, and a delightful dance it shall be.
Oh, I think this room a most excellent choice, Mr. and Mrs. Weston, as I was telling Mr. Churchill on the way over here. Oh, it's a most excellent choice.
Miss Fairfax, if you are very kind, you will play something, and it will be one of the waltzes we danced to last night. Perhaps from the new set of Irish melodies that I believe was sent with your pianoforte. Very thoughtful of Colonel Campbell, was it not? True affection only could have prompted it.
You speak too plain. She must understand you.
I hope she does. I'm not the least ashamed of my meaning.
Really, I'm half ashamed and wish I'd never taken up the idea.
I'm very glad you did, Miss Woodhouse. I now have a key to all her odd looks and ways. If she does wrong, she ought to feel it. She's playing Robin Adair at the moment. It's his favourite.
My dear.
Yes.
He has asked her. Frank has secured Emma for the first two dances. Oh. I knew he would.
God. Oh, yes, indeed, it would make a most delightful venue for a ball.
I think I must be in love with him. This sensation of listlessness, weariness, stupidity. This feeling of everything's being dull and insipid about the house. I must be in love.
Emma! Emma!
Going?
Miss Woodhouse, of all horrid things, leave-taking is the worst, but my aunt demands it. She writes this morning that she's too unwell to do without me, and entreats me to set off for Enscombe without delay.
Oh, but you will come again. This will not be your only visit to Randalls.
Ah, the uncertainty of when I may be able to return. I shall try for it with zeal. It will be the object of all my thoughts and cares.
Our poor ball must be quite given up.
Ah, the ball. Why did we wait for anything? Why did we not seize the pleasure at once? If I can come again, we are still to have our ball. My father depends upon it. And do not forget your engagement.
And you must be off this very morning?
Yes, my father is to join me here. We shall walk back together and I'm to be off immediately. I'm almost afraid that every moment will bring him.
Not 5 minutes to spare? Even for your friends, Miss Fairfax and Miss Bates?
Yes, I've already called there.
Oh.
Passing the door, I thought it better to... In short, perhaps, Miss Woodhouse, I think you can hardly be without suspicion.
He's undoubtedly very much in love. Everything denotes it.
You were quite in the right. It was most natural to pay your visit then.
It was something to feel that all the rest of my time might be given to Hartfield. My regard for Hartfield is most warm.
Frank, my boy, it's time to go.
Well, I shall hear about you all. That's my chief consolation. I've engaged Mrs. Weston to correspond with me. In her letters, I shall be at dear Highbury again. Goodbye, Miss Woodhouse.
Goodbye.
And yet when I think of him making an imaginary declaration, I'll refuse him. I must be on my guard not to encourage him. His feelings are warm, but I imagine them rather changeable. I shall do very well after a little while. And then it'll be a good thing over. For they say everybody is in love once in their lives. And I shall have been let off very easily.
Well, Miss Woodhouse, what did you think of her? Is she not very charming?
Yes, indeed. A remarkably elegant gown.
I'm not surprised that he would have fallen in love.
I felt it peculiarly unlucky for Mr. Elton to be in the same place with the woman he had just married, the woman he had wanted to marry, and the woman he'd been expected to marry. But there's no surprise in his falling in love. A pretty fortune, and she came in his way.
He called her Augusta. How delightful. They will be paying you a visit to Hartfield soon, I expect.
I must compare Hartfield to Maple Grove, my brother Mr. Suckling's seat. Oh. The grounds of Hartfield are small, though neat and pretty. But this room is the very size and shape of the morning room at Maple Grove, astonishingly like. Whenever you are transplanted, like me, Miss Woodhouse, you will understand how delightful it is to meet with anything at all like what one has left behind. I always say that it is quite one of the evils of matrimony. Oh, I perfectly understand your situation, however. Your father's state of health must be a great drawback. Why does he not try Bath?
My father has tried it, more than once. It is not likely to be useful to him now.
That's a great pity, for I assure you, Miss Woodhouse, the advantages of Bath to the young are pretty generally understood, and I could immediately secure you some of the best society in the place.
Thank you, but our going to Bath is quite out of the question. I do not ask whether you are musical, Mrs. Elton. Upon these occasions, a lady's character generally precedes her, and Highbury has long known that you are a superior performer.
Oh, no, indeed, I protest against such an idea. I said to Mr. E. that I would give up parties, balls, and plays, for I have no